We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we work and live, the Awabakal and Worimi people, and pay our respects to elders past and present. We celebrate the stories, culture, and traditions of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander elders of all communities who also work and live on this land.
You're listening to Boob to Food, the podcast with Luca McCabe and Kate Holm. There is so much noise in the parenting space.
And we don't mean the tantruming toddler. We understand it can feel confusing, conflicting, and overwhelming.
That's why we are bringing our years of experience as a midwife, nutritionist, and naturopath.
And of course, mums.
So that you can confidently navigate the roller coaster of motherhood from boob to food and beyond.
Each week, you'll hear practical wisdom, expert advice, and inspirational stories of other mums in the depths of this parenting journey.
Let's dive in.
Today's episode was brought to you by Keep Cup. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Boob to Food, the podcast. Hello, Kate. Welcome back.
Hello. Thank you.
Very formal. How's your week been?
Yeah, my week started with me being sick, actually, which was annoying. It was the same sickness that I think like 2 weeks ago I mentioned before we went camping that Jude had brought home from school and then anyway, it slowly filtered its way through the family and it's just inevitable that it makes its way to me, but it was fine. It was just a head cold and a very random ear pimple. That was the worst part of the sickness. I had this like blind pimple in my ear, which I felt so unwell. It gave me vertigo. It gave me tinnitus. It was like so painful. It was absolutely driving me insane. But anyway, there's worse things.
Maybe it was a boil, not a pimple.
Maybe. It was so bizarre.
Sounds more impressive if you say you had a boil in your ear, not a pimple.
It also sounds grosser. But anyway, it's not there now and I'm feeling much better. Yeah, and otherwise the week's been good. It's just last week of school holidays. It's been pretty low key, to be honest. Yeah, had a slower start to the week and then it was Anzac Day on Thursday, but small business life, I still worked on Thursday. Although I did, it was my, we had new neighbours move in, which I mentioned also a few weeks ago, and they're so lovely. They've become good friends quite quickly. And so it was my neighbour's birthday and she had a little party housewarming and I made the most epic birthday cake. I don't know if you saw it on my Instagram. It was like, I've kind of taken this on now as my thing.
I did and now I expect that for my birthday.
I will. I would love to. Yeah, okay. I will.
You have a year to prepare.
I'm really enjoying it and I'm certainly not like an expert baker, but I think my passion for cake making started when I had Jude and I really wanted to make sure that I could make whatever birthday cake he wanted. And so it started with a hideous duck cake that was like falling over and looked really ugly. But I think I've progressively gotten better and now I feel like this is my love language to people on their birthday. I will make you an extravagant cake. So that's been the highlight of my week.
You're funny.
How was your week? You're feeling less sleep deprived this week.
I am. Yes. Will, everyone, have you been listening? Has slept in his bed for 5 nights in a row.
That is so amazing.
All night.
All right.
So this is his big boy bed that we got and it's a floor bed we got from the Perk Shop. And I spoke about it and how for like, it was nearly a month he was just in my bed every single night from 10 o'clock and, yeah, I just don't sleep well with a child in my bed. Mm. Anyway, I didn't realize how tired I was until now that I'm not tired because I was like nearly trying to fall asleep every afternoon. Mm. And anyway, now I feel myself again. I was really snappy. Anyway, it's great. Yeah. And for anyone who wants tips, I did nothing. I did nothing different. We did bribe him with a lollipop in the mornings, but I also did that for the 3 weeks prior.
Yeah, right.
And that didn't work.
So interesting. Yeah. I mean, the bribery worked for us, except I went all out and our bribery was a scooter. Maybe a lollipop's
like
better.
But now I'm like, how long do we keep the lollipop thing going on for? Because he just asks for it every day now. I mean, I bought like the, what are they called, Yum Pops or something. They're fine, but I'm like, yeah, when do you phase the lollipops out?
Yeah.
And then my eldest son's like, I slept all night. Like, do I get one? I'm like, no.
Oh.
Anyway, so that's good. We did nothing. I guess it's the funny thing with parenting, hey? It's like you hope everything's a phase, but you don't mm-hmm. know. And if you knew it was a phase, you'd get through it a lot easier and you wouldn't worry so much.
Yep.
But when you don't know how long this phase is going to go for, or if it is a phase, it's hard. It's like mentally hard to get through. But if someone had said, oh, Will will sleep in your bed for 3 weeks or 4 weeks straight and then he won't, I'd be like, oh, fine, no worries, you know.
Yeah.
It's the kind of same with labor, I think.
Yeah.
If someone was like, this will go for 15 hours, you're like, okay, I've got 15 hours, you know, and you count down. But it's that, I don't know how long this is going to go for.
It's true. That mental game is so much of parenting. Actually, it's probably a good segue into today's episode as well. Mm. It's a different topic. We're moving age groups today and speaking more about tweens, which
this was a selfish request for my end, I think, because
that's great.
Flynn, well, I thought he was a tween. Courtney, who we interviewed, said tween was from 10.
Mm.
I think he's verging into that tweendom stage, which we'll talk a lot about in the episode, obviously. But yeah, I feel like I've said this a few times on the podcast. I feel like there's a weird parallel of parenting at the moment where I'm parenting a nearly tween and parenting a toddler.
Mm.
And my eldest child, who for the last few years has really had barely any needs, is now starting to get some needs again. Mm. I mean, we all have needs, obviously, but like, I don't know how to explain it. It's like he's turning into a toddler again.
Yeah.
You know, like he was kind of easy. I don't, this sounds mean to ignore. I don't know how to word
maybe
it.
Maybe like self-sufficient.
My, well,
or
yeah,
like,
just like my toddler just, it's, sometimes it feels like I have one child, my 2-year-old. Like my other two are quite self-sufficient. Like they of course have needs. I feel like I drive them all the time everywhere. Like that's what I feel like my life is. Mm-hmm. But they're quite happy without me now. And now it's like these like attitudes starting to creep back in, and these, you know, deep chats are wanting to be had, and these emotions are being had, and it's like, I don't know how to parent this next sort of stage. So this was a selfish podcast on my end.
But it was great for me too. And so my eldest is only 5 and a half. And I think if you're listening and you've got babies, like for me, this was really reassuring that, you know, people do say awful things about like, just wait until they're teenagers. Mm. And like, I have had some nervousness around like what that stage of parenting is going to look like. But Courtney is just so reassuring. She's definitely a pro at this. Her eldest is 19 and her youngest is 7. So she's got 5 kids. Mm. So there's a lot of lived experience there. And she's just so beautiful in the way she approaches motherhood and so generous in how she shares. She does also have some courses. So I mentioned in the episode, I took her pregnancy and birth course many, many years ago, and she has a teens and tweens course. So she's definitely up to date with like the evidence around parenting this age group and strategies for things like technology and those difficult conversations and what to do when you need to hold a boundary and all of those topics that kind of is applicable to toddlers too.
And it's great to listen to before you hit this tween stage, because there's things that we talk about, like the conversations around sex, for example, that, you know, you don't want to wait too long for. Mm. And it was a bit of an eye-opener for me. So hopefully you really enjoy this episode.
Well, welcome to Boob to Food, the podcast. Lovely Courtney. We are very excited to have you here today speaking all things tweens, which is quite foreign for me. My eldest is only 5, but also I very much find myself projecting into the future and feeling worried about those older years, because I know that they can be challenging for many families, and it just like brings so much newness, I guess. Like you get used to the babies and the toddlers, and then next minute you have this independent older child. So you are an expert on all things tweens and teens and all ages of kids, really. But if anyone hasn't come across you and your work before, can you just share a little bit about who you are and who's in your family?
Yes, of course. And thank you for having me. I am a mother of 5. Our youngest just turned 7 and our eldest is about to be 19. So he graduated high school last year. We live in Bangalore, just outside of Byron Bay. We've lived there for about 8 years now. And before that, we were in London. So the first 12 years of our children's lives were sort of there. I have been in the sort of family lifestyle sphere, writing about motherhood and sharing what I've learned and my experiences since 2007. So right after my second baby was born, I started a blog back in those days when blogs were sort of new. And since then I've been writing about motherhood and sharing my experiences and connecting with other mothers. And I offer online courses and membership, a monthly membership. And that's sort of what I do.
Beautiful. Actually, just you saying that, I took your pregnancy and do you have a pregnancy and birth course?
Yeah.
Must have been when I was pregnant with my eldest, who, is 5 and a half. Wow. And so when you say your youngest is 7, I think, no way, because I remember he was quite young around that time that I did that course.
Yeah, that's wild. And it's crazy to think that it's been that long. So I've got a course on pregnancy and birth in the first year. And then obviously I have a course on tweens and teens. It's true what you said about all these stages and how much learning there comes with a new stage. And I definitely found that to be true about the tweens and the teen stage. I don't know. I felt quite, it came naturally to me to parent a baby. And toddlers, you know, obviously they come with challenges, but I felt like it was all pretty manageable, or at least kind of for me, you know, I'm the eldest of 5 kids. So I come from a big family and I'd kind of seen that all before, but it really was when my kids started to enter the tweens and teen stages that I was really humbled in my motherhood journey and really realized how much I needed to learn and educate myself. It's like I'd never read a parenting book really until I had a tween. So there is a lot to know. And that's kind of the nice thing about tweens and teens is that there is a lot going on for them that you can learn and educate yourself about, which really can help prepare you for that stage. And understanding it and understanding the changes that happen to them, like within their brain, especially within their brain, but also just with their body and the sort of things that they need more of and all of that, it really can help you to be a better, more patient, more understanding mother. I think it is definitely good to educate yourself and to start thinking about that stage.
I actually love what your course said about that, how we have so much more patience for our 2-year-olds because we understand that they don't understand certain things, but then we put so much pressure and we have less patience on our tweens and teens because we expect so much more of them at that age, but there's actually still so much growing that they need to be doing at that age.
That was definitely the biggest lesson for me with my eldest when he was entering that stage, was just I had so much expectation of what I expected him to be able to understand and do, and a level of, like, you know, respect for the way you talk within our family and all these things that, you know, you think you've done and you've educated and you've shared and you've, like, prepared this child. And then they go through this phase where they become quite self-conscious and uncomfortable in their own skin, and sort of their worst self gets shown to their parents, the people who love them most, the people they feel most protected, you know, amongst. And I just remember feeling so frustrated that this child would be acting like that. I expected so much more of him. But actually, at that onset of adolescence, when their brain starts making these really enormous changes, it's very, very similar to the changes that happen in the 0 to 3-year-old. The amount of brain growth and the amount that it's growing and changing, and sort of the imbalance that happens, is very similar. And so actually they do things like a toddler, you know, and it's kind of not their fault. And I think when you understand that, it does give you, I mean, I'm not someone who naturally has a lot of patience. My husband has a lot more patience than I have. And so it's something I've always struggled with anyway. Then definitely in the tween and teen years, it really requires you to up the patience levels, and understanding what's going on for them is helpful for that, I found.
I'm glad I've got a fair few years to work on the patience. Maybe it's all perfectly timed so that, you know, at the moment, so my eldest is 5 and a half and my youngest is 7 months.
So I'm still in the like sleep deprivation, feeling touched out, like the intensity of that period. And I think if you were to throw a tween on top of that and requiring extra patience, I may not have it.
Yeah, I was just thinking that you would have had Wilkie, who would have been a baby when you had young teens. So yeah, you would have been very in that. I kind of feel like that at the moment, even though my eldest is only, he's nearly nine. I feel like I'm into kind of different, I don't know, spheres of parenting a lot of the time. Like I've got this nearly nine-year-old who's craving independence and craving like, I don't know, he's bored all the time and he's got a little bit of attitude now and he's just in that next stage. And then I've got the two-year-old that won't get off me and, you know, whinges all the time. And it's like, it's very hard sometimes to parent the two different age groups. And then the poor middle child just, you know, has to go either way because it's like, well, I can't cater to you at all. So
I always say that was definitely the hardest, and I know it will be. Like, I'm sure there'll be more challenges in my motherhood journey, but definitely that has to go down as being the hardest phase I've ever had, was having like a 13, 14-year-old and then a two-year-old.
Mm. Yeah.
And the difference in their needs, but also kind of the similarity in their needs too. Like I said, like they're both throwing tantrums. And that was difficult. Also, I mean, our youngest, Wilkie, it was a difficult toddler. He was more difficult than any of my other kids. So that in itself was really challenging. But yeah, it is hard when you've got kids spanning different ages because they do require such different needs. And but it, I mean, it's in some ways it's such a good reminder that really they just need you to love them even when they're being their ugliest self. Like when they're being the most unlovable, it's when they need the most love. It's so hard because so counterintuitive, you know, you just want to not love them, especially the teenagers. Like it's easier when they're a cute little toddler to still love them when they're throwing a tantrum. But when the teenager's throwing a tantrum, it requires a lot in you to still want to love them.
I always say that God made toddlers so cute because they have to be physically cute to get away with the things that they get away with. But yeah, teenagers not as physically cute. I remember my mom used to always say to me, she'd say, this is probably not very nice, but she'd say, I love you, but I do not like you. I remember, like, not now, thankfully. But when I was a teen, I just remember her always saying that. She's like, I love you, but I do not like you. And now I can so see where she was coming from when she's, I'm going to not say that to my kids because I remember being quite scarred by that comment, but I can sort of see where she's coming from.
You can understand. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. It is. Obviously, you never stop loving your children. But they can be quite unlovable at times.
And so, Courtney, what age is considered to be a tween?
I think that's I don't think anyone's like set some clear standard for it. But I would say from the age of 10, or at least that's what I approach it from. But you know, I have lots of parents of 8 and 9 year olds who've taken my tweens and teens courses, and they always give me that feedback that they're so happy they did, even though their kid isn't technically a tween yet, because it really can prepare you for what's to come. And it does really, my experience at least, is that it does happen so quickly. Like overnight, your child's just changed and they've entered this different stage. So to be prepared for it. But I think definitely like 10 to 13s, you're in that tween stage. And adolescence, I think, again, you know, they define that from the time your body starts to change and your brain starts to change. And I think a lot of, you know, psychologists and doctors are saying that that's starting to happen early and earlier. Mm. I think you're safe from 10.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's like I mentioned, my eldest is nearly 9 and he's still very much innocent, you know, still very young at heart and, yeah, a lot of innocence about him. But I can see these little trickles of tween coming through and I just think, oh, my gosh, that's why I wanted to talk to you, because I'm like, I want to be prepared. And I've read your course, which is amazing. And I just think everyone, yeah, who's entering this should read it, because it is really, really important to be prepared. I guess it's like being pregnant and getting prepared for the baby to come.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that. You don't want to be in that zone and then think, oh my gosh, I don't know how to tackle this. Anyway, because yeah, it's hard. Like I said, they're wanting this independence. They're getting this attitude, this pushback, this like pulling away, but also still wanting to be close. And it's, yeah, it's hard to know what is the right thing to do as a parent. And anyway, do you have any advice on like, how would you recommend keeping them close, but still letting them have this independence that they want?
Yeah, well, I think it always is helpful for me to realize just how normal it is for kids to want to, you know, when they enter adolescence, they want to individuate, if that's a word. you know, they want to separate from their family, and they start to want to form their own identity separate from their family, and they start to have their own preferences for things. And it can be really hard for parents, because you've had this little kid that's kind of come under your wing and they kind of do what you want to do and you're kind of in charge, and like they listen to the music you put on in the car, you know, more or less, and they sort of do all these things. And then suddenly you have a child who has their own opinions and wants to separate from you, and it can, you know, wants to go in their room and spend more time away from you, and perhaps even shut the door and be in there by themselves. And, you know, and they start to want more time with their friends, and all of these things come. And I think I always find it really helpful just to remind myself how normal that is. It's really, it can be really hard. I mean, I have lots of mothers who share with me how heartbroken they feel when that happens, because it is the closing of a chapter. You know, it is sort of the end of that beautiful childhood phase that you have with them. And also there is this beautiful kind of middle childhood phase that's kind of from like 5, 6 up to about 9, 10, where they are so beautiful and so, I don't know. I mean, they're all children are beautiful.
But it's definitely the nicest age to parent. I always say, I think from 4 and then, like I said many times now, to my son's nearly 9. Like, it's just been so nice these last 5 years with him.
Yeah.
Like, they're just, you know, the years before were nice, but they were hard. And I'm like, now it's not hard. It's just a nice age to parent. So
yeah,
I agree.
And they kind of, you know,
they're like your little mate.
Yeah, they're like your little mate. Yeah. And you know, you're past the phase where like you have to buckle them in the car seat every time you get in the car. And like they're independent enough, but they're still little. And and so I think it can be really hard when they do enter that tween phase and they start to change. And that's really hard for parents. And and it can be really sad. But I think, you know, it's like I said, it's just about understanding how normal it is and just kind of trying to be excited about this new relationship that you have with them. I mean, that's one of the hardest things about tween and teens is that learning how to hold them tight and let them go at the same time. I mean, that is really probably that, and having enough patience would be the two things I think a lot of parents struggle with in that particular phase of parenting. Because they do need their independence and you want them to want that. You know, there's a book that I read years ago. Now I'm going to blank on her name, but she's a mom of 4 kids in the UK. Oh my gosh, I'm blanking on her name and I don't have any of my books with me, but she wrote this book about teenage girls especially. And it says, I think it's called Mom, What's Wrong With You or something like that. And she said, you want your kids to want to challenge you, because that's, if they're not doing that, like how are they going to go into adulthood without this, you know, set of opinions and preferences and the ability to ask for what they want and know what they want and to, you know, all these things. And unfortunately, as their parents, we're the ones they start doing that. They start practicing those skills with. And that's, you know, it's important for them to do that with us. And the more, like another psychologist that I read a book and she said, the more safe a child feels in their relationship with the parents, the more comfortable they're going to be showing you their ugliest self, their worst self, all these things that they're needing to get out. They're going to do that with you because you're still going to love them and they still feel safe with you. And so it's almost like you should see it as an accomplishment in how secure your child feels in your relationship with them, that they're doing that.
It's a nice way to soften the blow.
I feel like it's the same with toddlers. They say the same with toddlers, though, or even when your kids start school and then they get in the car and lose it at you. Mm. It's like as soon as they hit that safe place, well, they always say toddlers are the worst for their mums generally because, you know, we're their safe place and then they go to a friend's house and they're a little angel. I guess it's the same kind of thing with tweens and teens. It doesn't change, does it? It's probably the same with us. I'm the same. I come home. True. My husband gets the worst version of me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, that's exactly it. Because we all have that, you know, and we all get grumbly and impatient. Yeah. And when you're feeling stressed or when you're feeling insecure, your worst self comes out, you know, and often it's the people closest to you that see that side of you. Mm. And it's the same with teenagers.
And I think as well, like, I would want my kids to have that practice of voicing their opinions or saying no or pushing back with me in a safe environment so that they can, like, I think about, I don't know, just the, in my mind anyway, the never-ending list of potential challenges that are out there for tweens, like, I don't know, peer pressure and bullying and, like, getting in a car with someone who's been, you know, under the influence or like bad things on social media or whatever it might be. And I think I want my kids to have a really strong sense of self and a really strong no. Yeah. And I can see my toddler in particular, she's 3.5 now, has a very strong no. And my eldest, who's a much softer boy, he also has a quite a strong no, although we've had to like practice a lot with his like assertiveness. But I think let me be the training ground, even if I go to bed every night like ripping my hair out and I've grown a few more grays. I think let them practice on me so that they can really be solid in that when they get out in the real world. Because
exactly,
I think it's, I don't know, I feel scared about what's out there and I know it's not.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And it doesn't mean that like you need to tolerate all sorts of abuse from your child. You know, there's boundaries and those boundaries are incredibly important. I mean, in all stages of your child's development, but, you know, I think I see sometimes parents, they get to this point in adolescence where they know their child needs more independence and you assume that your child's grown all this and done all this like learning and growing and they're completely capable just to kind of wing it without boundaries. And that's, you know, setting your child up for disaster, really, because those boundaries are so important, even when they require more independence, you know, and it's just a different way, I think, of communicating boundaries. It's really, I have found like teenagers don't take, you know, with a toddler, you can kind of get away with saying, because I said so. You know, I mean, that I was parented that way. My dad was like, no, because I said so. And that was just that. And I think sometimes that comes out of me and I'm aware that it's not the right way to say it, but your toddlers kind of go, okay, you said so. But a tween and a teen does not accept that, you know? Mm. So, you know, with boundaries and communicating boundaries, they really respect you more and respect the boundary more when you take the time to explain why. Mm. And when you want to see them as this individual, this unique person, and they have wants and desires and they are going through this time of change, but also they need to know that it's your job to keep them safe. You know, it's the same. You wouldn't let your toddlers in a room with a bunch of knives and hope that they stay safe, you know, in the same way that you're not going to let your toddler or your teenager go to a party with a bunch of drinking and alcohol without any sort of boundaries in place. And so it's hard, you know, it's hard for parents because it's like, you know, that first time when they want to go to a party. I remember Easton very clearly, I can remember exactly where we were in the house when he came and said, there's this party happening. at, you know, so-and-so's house. And I think there's going to be alcohol there and I would like to go. And I just, it was because it was the first time, I was a bit like, ah, what do I do? You know, what do I say? And is this right? And, you know, and then I really thought like, well, here he is being quite mature, explaining to me that there's this party. Like I certainly was not talking like that to my parents. You know, I was like, I'm going to my friend Allison's house. We're having a, you know, girl slumber party. And then we obviously snuck out and didn't do what I said. And I lied and we were at parties because that's just what teenagers will do. You know, if they don't feel that they can talk to you honestly, because you're going to absolutely say no to them and not take in what they have to say with an amount of understanding, they will often lie to you, you know? So here he was saying the telling me the truth and asking me. And so at that point it was like, well, what do we feel comfortable with? And I think one thing with teenagers that I've always found helpful is when they ask something like that, that you don't know immediately what to say, I really need some time to think about that. Or I need time to talk to your dad about that. Or, okay, you know, thank you for telling me this and thank you for asking me. And I can see that you really want to go to this party. Can you give me some time to think about it? And so that's a helpful tool because I think if kids know that you've actually given it some thought and it's not just an immediate no, even if you plan on saying no, sometimes that can be really helpful. Anyway, I remember talking to Michael and we thought, well, maybe we let him go, but we explained that he needs to be picked up by 9:30. And we're picking him up. So he couldn't have been, you know, we don't want you to be drinking. And we're going to pick you up and bring you home. So there, we didn't allow like going to friend's house and staying there. And also, can I have the name of where you're going and the mother's number or the parent's number? And I would give a call to that person and just check in with what was going on. And so you kind of are allowing them this freedom, but keeping a boundary. And so that's kind of what it is in this stage of adolescence is you're letting them go and holding them tight. And there's just this balance of back and forth. But I think as long as you're doing it with a real respect for each other and communicating it, taking the time to communicate. And, you know, if you are going to say no, explain why no, you know. And sometimes I have to even say, you know, because I just don't feel in my heart that it's right. And I don't know why else, but I just don't feel it's right. You know, we've had to recently with Ivy, I've got she's about to turn 15 and we let the boys, her two older brothers have social media at 15. And so Ivy's been hoping to have social media at 15 and I've just been doing a lot of reading and researching obviously for my courses. And I just know, just how bad it is, especially for girls. And the more I read and the more I learn, the more I don't want her to have social media at 15. And a lot of experts argue 16 should be the time, you know. And so I've had to say that to her, which is she sees that as being unfair because her brothers got it at 15. And I've had to just say, I know it is unfair. It isn't fair. But I'm trying to protect you as your mother. I know it's not healthy for you. I know it's not right. So it's about having those conversations.
When talking about boundaries, what has been your experience then when your boundaries are different to say like another family? So for example, Ivy's friends all have social media. I'm just guessing, you know, if they all have social media and then your boundaries are different. This is something that I can see again creeping in. And so, for example, we have a no sleepover policy for Flynn at this stage anyway. Whether it changes or not, I'm not sure. He can sleep at his cousin's house, but no friends. Doesn't matter how close. We just made a blanket rule.
Yeah.
And, you know, he asked me the other day, he's like, but why can my cousin have a sleepover with his friends who's younger than me? And I just was like, I didn't want to go into the whole like, well, there's sexual predators out there, or anything like that. But I was just like, I said the same thing as you. I was like, I just don't feel right leaving you. It's my job to protect you. And he actually nodded and was like, okay, but I can see that pushback's going to get
harder and harder.
It's easier when they're younger. They accept that more.
Yes. So what do you do when,
more they challenge that answer.
Yeah. So what's your answer then when another family does something very different to you? Because sort of the fallback we've always had is, well, that's what their family does and this is what our family does, but I don't know how long that's going to fly for.
I mean, I think it will fly because he'll be used to you saying that and knowing that you have his best interest at heart and that his safety is, you know, so important. And, you know, that happens. I mean, every parent is faced with that, right? Because there's always someone who does something differently and there's always someone who's more relaxed about boundaries than you are. And yeah, I think it's just about having that real open conversation. I mean, it's a really tricky one to navigate. I will say that teenagers, tweens and teens, they're famous for saying, I'm the only one who's not allowed this. I'm the only one who doesn't have a phone. And they think that. They really think that because they get very, like, it's really normal for that when they enter adolescence where they just become so self-absorbed, so self-conscious, their world becomes quite narrow. And they start to think they're the only one who doesn't have these privileges, or I'm the only one with a parent who's doing this. And I think what I think is important is always just for the parent to understand that that's a very normal response from a child, but then not to get sucked into it, because it can be easy to think, well, my child's the only one without a phone and I don't want my kid to be the only one without a phone. And you start to lose track of your priorities as a parent and what you know is right for them. But just to understand that your child is, this is what, it's normal, and probably they're not the only one. I remember in year 7, because we have a rule, no mobile phones until 14. So that's in year 8. No social media till, well, now I'm changing it to 16. So those has been our rules, right? And so I remember when our eldest was in year 7, I got that. I'm the only one without a phone. And then we had this class meeting like 2 months later. And after the class meeting, I was standing around with a group of other parents and I said, oh, Easton's just kind of, I'm getting the pressure to have a phone. He's the only one. And there were like 4 or 5 other parents saying, no, my child doesn't have a phone. But Easton was adamant he was the only one. And I was like, ah, okay. No, you're not the only one. And then that really helped me to really kind of stick my heels down and be firm in that rule. So I think it's more about you and your response to them. It's like when you have a baby and you want them to suddenly start like sleeping better and you aren't going to nurse them to sleep, or, you know, that all these things in parenting are training you for basically when they're teenagers, because it's like, you know, it's best for them to sleep through the night. So you're going to, oh, this is my experience. At least I had to stop breastfeeding my babies to sleep, because I knew that once I did that, they would sleep better. But they obviously want the boob to fall asleep, right? Mm-hmm. So I had to know in my heart it was right for them. And then I feel like your child, they sense when you know it's really right for them. They sense it. And so those transitions are easier when you're stronger in your belief as a parent. And it's the same when they're a teenager and they're saying, everyone else gets sleepovers, why don't I get a sleepover? And if you can separate yourself from the, I feel sorry for my child, they're the only one, and go back to what you know is right for them, it can help you in parenting them. And when you come from that place, they feel they feel more secure with you as their parent, bound with that boundary in place, because you're coming from a place of your real knowing in yourself. It's tricky, but it's like all these parenting things are preparing us, you know, we're just getting good at making these decisions and stuff like that, and kind of crossing these transitional phases.
We'll be back after this short break.
Today's episode was brought to you by Keep Cup. 2024 marks 15 years for Keep Cup, and a lot has changed, but the fundamentals are the same. Keep Cup manufactures locally in Australia and continues to innovate recycled and recovered materials into their reusable product range.
KeepCut provides lo-fi solutions around the moments that people reach for single-use products, and our favourites are definitely the iconic glass brew cork and the new insulated steel thermal cup, because we all need our coffee to be insulated, otherwise you're drinking cold dregs, and as well as bottles. They're perfect for drinking hot coffee and also baby chinos on the go.
Did you know that it only takes 24 uses for your KeepCut brew cork to have a lower impact than single-use cups?
You can purchase KeepCut's full range of reusable cups and bottles from keepcut.com. And to help on your reuse journey, KeepCut have kindly given the Boob to Food listeners a 20% discount for the month of May. Use the code BOOBTOFOOD to purchase yours today. Now let's get back to today's episode.
I found... I have had to do a lot of learning around this because my nature would be to like want to fix it. I don't want them to feel sad. I don't want like I'm very much like, oh, whatever you need to make you happy. But realizing that that's actually an ineffective strategy, and you do have to sometimes lovingly hold these boundaries. And particularly with my 5.5-year-old, there's been things recently, I can't think of a specific example, but I'll say no to something and he'll say, like, if you don't let me do whatever it is, I'll be sad forever. And I've actually started saying to him, I'm okay with you being sad and I'm going to be here to support you. Like, and just being okay. Like, they probably are going to push back, and I'm sure the teenage version of that would look incredibly different. But being okay to hold that negative emotion and hold that, whatever emotion or sadness comes up, and still lovingly within yourself stay firm in that boundary.
Well, I think it's like, I'm sure you guys are familiar with Dr. Becky Kennedy. She's a psychologist in the US, and she's so good at that, explaining that in such a clear, understandable way. And I listened to her podcast. She was on the Goop podcast a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. Gwyneth was asking her these questions, and this, and she's, I like her as well, Dr. Becky, because she kind of paints a very, physical picture of kind of how to parent. And so she said, basically, you want to think of your child's childhood and the experiences and emotional challenges that they might come across in childhood. Think of it as like this backyard, this garden behind your house. And in this garden, there are all these benches, which symbolize all these experiences that they're going to have. So there's going to be the, I didn't get invited to a birthday party, and I feel left out. And there's the, I didn't do well on this test and I feel disappointed in myself. And I mean, there's all sorts of, all these emotional experiences, right? And she said, our job as parents is not to go and pull them off that bench. Our job is to go and sit with them on that bench, I know, and let them feel seen and heard. And you understand and you sympathize with their feeling, but you're not trying to take it away from them, because we need our kids to learn how to have these emotional, in order to become emotionally intelligent and to go into adulthood with this resilience of these, you know, sadness and left out and all these feelings, they need to know how to do it, how to experience that feeling. Mm. And so I always think of that all the time when my kids come home and they've got this thing. It's not my job to pull them off that bench of that feeling they're having. It's my job just to sit with them in it and let them feel it. And so I think that that can be really helpful when you have a toddler as well as when you have a teenager.
Yeah, I love that kind of illustration of, yeah, being with them alongside whatever it is they're feeling, not having to fix it, not trying to change it, not trying to, yeah, knock them onto a different bench, just being there with them, and also probably not getting fully absorbed in it yourself either, I imagine, especially with tweens. I don't know, again, I'm projecting, but I don't know how.
No, but that's absolutely right. And I think what I've learned in, you know, now I have now 3 teenagers and a tween. So often they come to you and they just want to tell you something, and they actually don't even want you to give them, like, I've found myself wanting to solve a problem for them or give them a solution or say, maybe you should try this or maybe you should try that. Teenagers don't actually want you to give them
a solution. Sometimes I don't even want it.
I know. Like, well, this is the thing. Sometimes I say to my husband, this and this happened. And he says, well, have you tried this and this? I just get angry.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, I want you to sympathize with my feeling. I want you to understand that I'm feeling frustrated. That's all I want. Right.
Yeah.
And so all of us, we all just want to feel seen and heard. We all just want, like, and especially tweens and teens, they just want their parents to know that they see them, that they sympathize. They don't want a solution. And often, like, it can be natural for us to be like, well, when I was a teenager, they don't want that either. They don't care like you did in the black and white era. You know, like, they basically think that's irrelevant to my life. My problem is my problem. This cannot relate to you. And they basically just want you to listen. And so that's, like, one of the tools for every parent of adolescents, is just to learn to listen better and to even sometimes close your lips when you want to say something, because that's not often what they're seeking.
Yeah. Coming back to technology, Courtney, I know this is something that's on many people's minds, and technology is obviously so pervasive and, you know, beneficial in many ways, but also comes with a lot of challenges. You mentioned, like, for your family, so 14 before a mobile phone and then 16 before social media. Do you have any other sort of guidelines or recommendations that you follow as a family around, like, whether it's screen time or, yeah, using technology in general?
Yeah, we have screen time limits. We just use Apple screen time and set limits on what they can do on their phones. And we have boundaries over when they can and cannot be on a device. What I have learned is that, you know, everyone has different rules and policies over when they give their child a phone. And really, it's not so important. I mean, I think for us, it's 14 and I wouldn't want to do it before, but for other parents, we'll find it different age that works for them and their family. But what's really important is that you explain the boundaries around it before you give your child a phone, because it's so much harder to put boundaries in place after they've had a little bit of freedom on their phone. Mm-hmm. And also, whenever you're giving your child a phone, they need to understand the potential dangers of being on that phone. So you need to be able to have all these conversations around pornography, bullying, sexting, what to share, what not to share, what to say, what not to say. The minute you're giving your child a phone, you're basically opening them up to so many things. And if you're not prepared to have all those conversations with them, then probably you shouldn't be giving your child the phone. So really, the phone should come after you've had all the conversations and you've set those boundaries in place. So for us, we had all these kind of rules, and we actually learned the hard way, because I remember with our first one, we had to rein back, because it's a slippery slope. And as soon as they get that, even now we have all these boundaries in place, and you'll find it slides a little bit, and you realize you need to kind of put a bit more control over it. Like, you know, you're not allowed phones in your bedroom with the door closed, but every once in a while the door will be closed. And, you know, it's like, and then you kind of, we have a small house, and I think, well, that's nice for them to have a little bit of privacy, but then now that's not healthy. And like, you're constantly navigating this. But yeah, I mean, we've just implemented screen-free Sundays. So device-free Sundays, nobody in our family is on a device. And that has been really amazing, because we were finding that, like, the teenagers were opting out of family excursions. You know, the 17 and 15-year-old weren't coming to the beach with us. And, you know, Ivy would kind of sit in her bed with Gilmore Girls playing on this laptop. And, you know, while that's sweet for her to be able to have that, opting out of family time to do that just didn't feel right for our family. And so again, we had to put kind of this, like, checks and balances in place to find a healthier balance with it. What else? Like, you know, you got to have those conversations about porn, because your child will see porn. It's everywhere. It's so prevalent. And it's not about protecting them from seeing it, because they'll see it. So it's about understanding and having the communicating with them what it is, why it's not healthy, why it's not a realistic portrayal of sex. All these things you need to explain to them before, you know, hopefully, ideally, before they see it, so that they know how to approach it when they do.
Well, I was having a look at the studies, and I think it's called the Australian Institute of Family Studies said that nearly half of children between the ages of 9 to 16 will experience regular exposure to porn. And I was nine. Okay. And then I was like, oh my God, nine. Yeah. My son's nearly nine. Yeah. I haven't even had the sex talk yet, which we've got to get to with you.
Because you do.
I know. I'm like,
yeah. I had a friend the other day, she was a 10-year-old, and she said, oh, when do I talk to my child about sex and porn? And I was like, now, like, now you do. You have to. It's. I remember hearing that a statistic. It was this woman, this GP in America, and she was saying that, I want to get this right, I think it's by the age of 16, 90-something percent of boys have seen porn of some sort. And I remember, I think my eldest was like 14 at the time, and then my second son was 12, and I was like, surely my kids haven't seen porn. Like, they don't even have phones. But I heard that statistic, and I was like, well, I should just go and have this conversation with them. And I sat with them each separately, and they both told me they'd already seen porn on the bus, you know, on someone else's phone. Because the thing is, when kids see porn, when they have that experience having seen something, it feels yucky, and they don't want to have that experience alone. They want to show it to somebody else, because when you show it to somebody else, it maybe makes it feel less lonely in that experience of having seen it. And so it's really normal for kids to show some other kid some terrible thing they've seen. And that's what happened for both my boys. And yeah, so then I was like, okay, well, then I've got to have a conversation with my 12-year-old daughter and the 9-year-old daughter. And like, and we talk about porn and sex and everything just openly at the dinner table now. Cause I'm like, the 7-year-old's just going to have to learn it all. And I honestly don't think it's too, like, porn, like, obviously there's an appropriateness, and maybe I haven't talked about porn with the 7-year-old, but things like sex and periods and all those things are such normal conversation. Anything natural.
I've been fighting it just so hard to bring it up. I'm like, I don't know how to bring it up, because he hasn't brought it up. And like I said, he's a very innocent, like, 9-year-old. There's some kids in his class that I'm like, you're not so innocent, you know, anymore. Or the girls, I find, are very different in his year. Like, they seem so much more older than him, whereas he just still, like, I don't know, likes watching Bluey and Peppa Pig, and like he's still quite, like, young. And so I just think it actually makes me feel ill to bring up sex, and I don't know why it makes me feel like that. Like, it's just because I'm talking to a little child about it, and I don't want him to know yet.
Well, I think it's a really normal feeling to feel that way.
That's good.
But every single expert I have spoken to, and I've spoken to so many wonderful experts on this specific topic, have said that the earlier you start, the better. And because he's so innocent, it actually might be easier for you. Because it's such a natural thing. It's such a beautiful thing. And so I think so often we approach sex with some level of shame, and it could come down to how we were told or taught about sex. And
I just remember it was in year six at school with, like, this random there's teachers at school that were also married, and they were literally like 70. Yeah, and I clearly remember that's when I learned about sex, and so I don't know if that scarred me.
See, I was 6 years old, and learned because a boy in the playground who was older said, you know, when your parents go to bed, they do more than just cuddle. And I was like, no, they don't. And then that night I went home and got the Where Do I Come From book, and I was absolutely mortified. Like, it was, I feel scarred.
That you had that book in your house, because that's, I was going to say, Luca, that's
okay,
like,
maybe that's a good, I need something to get me in it.
Sometimes it can be really helpful to have a book like that.
Okay.
I have like two of those books just in the normal stack of books next to Wilkie's bed. And sometimes we just get them out, and it's just so natural. It's not like, because you don't want it to be this sitting down.
No.
Uncomfortable, yes. One and done conversation that you're getting out of the way.
Yes.
Sex is a topic that as you talk about it with your kids, it evolves, right? Mm-hmm. So because you're going to have to introduce the idea of it being pleasurable and mm-hmm. being and how important that is, right? So it can start with how do babies get made? And then there's all this kind of evolution in this conversation. And really, you just want it to be really natural and normal to talk about. And one thing that I find has been helpful for other parents when I'm trying to kind of coach them in talking to their parents, there's two things. The first thing you can do is just start by asking them what they know. And sometimes you'll be surprised by what they already know mm. or what they think they know. Mm-hmm. And you can just start there and let their questions. Do you have any questions? Have you heard? Has anyone ever said the word sex to you? Do you have any idea what that is? Do you have any idea how babies are made? And see what they know mm. and follow their lead and what they're kind of asking you. Mm. That can be really helpful. And another thing that I would just remind yourself is that the more I tell myself this all the time, the more comfortable you are talking to your kids about that topic and every other topic that you'll have to talk about with them, the more comfortable they're going to be coming to you to mm-hmm. talk about it,
yep.
which is ultimately what you want.
Yep.
You want them to come to you with every question that they have. And when they have seen porn or when they have had their first sexual experience or whatever it is, whatever question they have, you want them to feel comfortable coming to you to tell you or share with you or ask you questions. And so they sense that awkwardness. So first of all, I would like, because you said it makes you sad to think that you're going to have to tell your precious boy who doesn't mm-hmm. know about sex, but actually you should see it as like actually exciting that he gets to like learn that. Mm. Like, so it's almost reframing it mm. in your way and just making it feel like the more comfortable you are talking about these things, the more comfortable he'll be coming to you.
Actually. Funny story, a friend of mine who has three kids and her daughter, her eldest must be similar age to Flynn. When she had the talk about sex afterwards, her daughter was like, gross, so you've done that three times.
Yes, exactly. I said that to my mom. I was like, you've done that five times? Like, yes.
Yes.
I feel like the thing that holds me back is like, I feel like that's that. It's kind of like you talking about the phone is that portal into that other world. Mm. I feel like talking about sex is like a portal into a world that he doesn't, to my knowledge, yet know about. Mm. Do you know what I mean? It's like this, I feel this like I want to just protect his innocence forever. But I also know, and I've heard so many people say this, that the earlier the better. So I know I need to do it. And like we talk about other things quite openly, like periods and things like that, you know, like I don't hide that kind of thing. Or like erections because my 2-year-old constantly has one, I swear. You know, and so like we're like, oh, you know, like it's kind of a joke at the moment. We haven't talked about it being like a pleasurable thing. But I feel like if he gets his first erection, I could be like a proper one that's not a blood erection. You know, I could be like, oh, I feel like comfortable talking about that. But for some reason it's just this initial like it's like I'm just trying to hold on to him being my baby.
I know a girlfriend of mine who's got an older some older boys, she was saying like, I think there's an element of it's like the magic. They still have that belief of magic. Like babies come into your tummy through like prayer and hope and magic. And it's like, actually they don't, you know? And so it's like peeling back some of that like magic of childhood. Not that I'm not saying that because sex is like not a magical or, you know, positive experience, but I think then the line of questioning is like, oh, so if that's not what I thought it was, what else is not what I thought it was?
Well, that's why probably the earlier you do it, the better. I mean, our eldest was 6 and he was asking me, we had a chili plant in the kitchen that wasn't outside. So obviously bees weren't able to pollinate the chili plant. And so Michael used to have to like self-pollinate his chili plant with a Q-tip or an earbud, whatever you call it in this country. And Easton just so naturally was like, well, why are you doing that? And then we were talking about pollinating and he was like, well, like it just evolved like that. And then he was like, well, how do animals make babies? And, you know, it was pretty much like the birds and the bees, like, you know, a conversation. And I just answered it like so naturally. And then he was totally fine with like nothing, no awkward, nothing, just completely like, so
just like matter of fact about it.
Matter of fact. Like yeah. Nothing.
I feel like my son will say things like, this is what I'm like, I need to be prepared. Because I feel like he'll be like, you know, I'll say, do you know what sex is? And he'll probably say no. And this is how that conversation goes in my head. And then I say, well, you know, it's when a man and a woman and their penis goes in their vagina. And then what do you say? Like, then you move around, like, and then no, so and I then how do you say, don't you do this? Like, go up to your sister and daughter. Do you know what I mean? It's like, how do you,
yeah.
Like, I don't want to demonize it, but I do because he's eight. Like,
yeah, it's tricky. I mean, I think in some ways, I think you have to reframe it in your own mind. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's like, you know, you say, because he's so innocent and you don't want to like ruin that innocence, but actually sex is really innocent. It's a really natural thing. You know, it's how babies are made. It's how, you know, it's how you, I mean, it's enjoyable and it should be enjoyable. And you want to empower your children with this, you know, like it can be really hard. Actually, it gets trickier when they're teenagers and they start to get to the stage where they can be, because it's like, you don't want them to be having sex until they love somebody. But then it's like, well, actually, do you really need to love somebody to have pleasurable sex if it's pleasurable for both people? And maybe not, you know, like I was raised in a very Catholic family where it was very shameful and you weren't allowed to like have sex until you were married and, you know, should definitely love somebody, which takes away your power, you know, when you think like that. It's, it demonizes and puts a lot of shame to a very natural thing. So I think sometimes it's about reframing it in ourselves so that we can have the kind of honest and, you know, comfortable conversation with our children.
So when they're young though, do you think it's okay to be like, this is for when you're an adult? But then when you're older, you would reframe the conversation.
Yeah, you're going to want to have this conversation all the time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I still talk with my kids all the time about that kind of thing, even though I've said it a million times, but it's like, you know, cause you want to, you know, trickier or more, you know, deeper kind of layers of this conversation take place as they get older, like, you know, like pleasure and consent and all sorts of those kind of topics. But when they're little like that, you know, it's like, well, this is how babies are made. That can start, you know, and you can even say there's, you know, a seed, or we call that sperm, inside the father that needs to fertilize the egg that's inside the mother. And in order for that to happen, the seed comes out of the penis and it needs to go up into, you know, like you can really explain it like that. And that's why books can be helpful, because they can show a picture. So it can make you feel less self-conscious when you're explaining it.
Mm. I think I'll have to get that book.
Yeah. You have the PDFs. I think there's good books
some
in there.
Good resources in there.
Yeah. Where do I come from? All the Roby Harris books. I think there's a series. I think there's like three of them. Those are all really great for just starting to talk to your children about sex.
Mm. And what about other, like, I guess more difficult or confronting topics, like, I don't know, like drugs and alcohol, or even on the topic of sex, like you mentioned consent and like sexual abuse and, you know, those sorts of things where, again, you want to bring like awareness to things that are probably going to show up in their world, and you want to protect them from and have that, like, I guess, scaffolding around their knowledge and how they can then respond in certain situations. When would you say, like, would you still think like younger is good, or is there an age when it's more appropriate to delve into those maybe like harder topics?
Yeah, well, I think that you'll find that it just naturally happens as they're ready for it. And, you know, you don't want to just tell your 9-year-old about, like, you're not going straight into the consent topic. But there's ways to talk about, you know, how you touch another person. And, you know, you can even be simple like that. Like, mm-hmm. you know, without, if they don't want you to touch them, then you can't touch them. You know, it can be something very simple like that. And then that can evolve as they get older. And you'll probably, you know, if you've made it comfortable to have these conversations with your kids, then you'll find that your kids will come to you with the questions too. I mean, every child's different. I have my eldest, the 19-year-old, he's kind of like what you see is what you get with him. He's very straightforward emotionally, very just pretty simple. I can like be in the kitchen with him and just bring up sex and it can be totally fine. Whereas the next one, the 17-year-old, he's a lot more emotionally complex. He's much more layered, a bit of an introvert. You know, they say like sometimes these kind of conversations are really good to have with kids when you're in the car because you're both kind of looking straight and you're not having like a direct eye to eye. And so I remember trying to have a conversation with Quinn in the car and he was like trying to get out of the moving car on the highway. Like he was so uncomfortable. And I was like, okay, this isn't how he feels comfortable. So he's a much more delicate boy. I have to approach every conversation I have with him in a very thoughtful way. I can't just ask him something in the kitchen. Mm. So I have to always make sure the right mood, you know, mm-hmm. often with him, we'll be in the sewing room and I'll be cutting fabrics and he'll be at the sewing machine and we're not looking at each other and he's a little bit distracted and I know he feels comfortable and safe and I can just bring up something very slowly. And it's, you know, each child is different in that way and you just need to kind of tune into what they're kind of comfortable with. But yeah, a lot of experts say that those kind of conversations can take place when you're walking the dog or if you're going for a walk or you're both cooking in the kitchen or you're both kind of busy doing mm-hmm. something else because it can be so awkward to like look your mom in the eyes mm. and she's telling you about like something that's, you know, and they're already so self-conscious mm-hmm. and awkward anyway. So yeah, it's just about, yeah, paying attention to it and you'll find like, I remember, you know, the story with the chili plant, I told the 6-year-old sex. And he and his brother, the one 2 years below, they shared a bed for all these years until they got to be teenagers. And they were so cute. They'd sleep in the same bed. And so I didn't realize that the oldest one then went and told the next one, the 4-year-old, about sex. So I'd read them a book one night and then I was tucking them in and Quinn got up and he went to the toilet before getting back in bed. And from the toilet, he just says to me, "Does it hurt or feel good when the dad puts his penis in the vagina?" And I was like, you know, the oldest one hadn't thought about asking that. Mm. Like he just took it as like, that's how babies are made. And then the younger one was like, "But does it hurt or feel good?" You know, so you'll start to get these questions and you'll be able to kind of go with them. Mm. I don't know. It's tricky because sometimes you just have to bring up a conversation that they haven't raised and like I said, it's about reframing it in your own mind. Like you've got to get comfortable with that topic before you approach your child about it. Mm. They can sense your discomfort. Mm. If you're awkward, they know.
I feel like I'll be okay if I have a starter, like the book or something to get me going. It's just that in like, I'm like, how do you just, without sitting down and having that, you know,
do it like honestly it can be like I don't even know, you know, you could be like
doing an activity or something
and like doing something distracting just make it be just put it out there
make it be normal there. Just a normal conversation. Well, I did like in your course as well how you said to try and find something like a shared interest with your child that you can continue doing. So you said your family's is like going surfing. And I think that is so important as they get older, just to keep that connection, like, because they do just want to sort of go away and then you don't get those times to have those conversations without sitting on the end of their bed. Mm. So trying to find those sort of like shared connection times I thought that was a really great tip.
It's so important, I think, because like we've said at the beginning, they start to have their own life and their own schedule, and they want to see their friends and they want to do their own thing. And you really, as a parent, have to kind of take advantage of those moments when you're together with them. And, you know, I used to be like, see it as kind of annoying driving my kids around to whatever they had to do, or, you know, you can see it as annoying that like your 16-year-old needs to be picked up at 10 p.m. from the party that they're going to. But Michael and I had a conversation about just really reframing it. Such a short period of time, really, in the grand scheme of things. And that's an opportunity for you to be in the car with that child one-on-one for 20 minutes and to, you know, recap, you know, how'd the night go? And, you know, and that's such a special time. And yeah, so even like, you know, having them one-on-one in the car, that's, you want to take advantage of that. And yeah, like you said, finding a shared hobby. I mean, Quinn's really into sewing. He's the 17-year-old boy. It's so cute. And I don't know how to sew. And I'm, you know, it's not a passion of mine, but I know that he can use the help with cutting a lot of the fabrics out. And so sometimes I just go and offer to help cut, and I'll say, okay, what are you making now? And how can I, what size do I need these? Do you need these cut? And I'll just sit in there with him and do that, because that's time that we have for us. And, you know, I was thinking the other day, like, I don't love Taylor Swift's music, but Ivy's so into it. And she's obsessed with her. And I think, well, okay, I've got Ivy in the car and we'll put on her new album and tell me what's your favorite song. And, you know, you have to try to take on your children's interests and show interest in their interests and passions, because even if it's not your favorite thing, you know, that's special time you have with them. And it is so fleeting. It really, like, I'm the oldest of five, and my dad, when we lived in London and I had three little kids, and, you know, I had three under the age of four at one point. So it was madness. And my dad used to call me and always be like in the like evening when I was preparing dinner, because of the time difference, and I had kids at my ankles and crying, and you're trying to make dinner and you know you have to bathe them and you put them to bed still and just so busy. And my dad would always call and just say, this is the time of your life and it goes so quickly. And he would say that over and over, to the point where sometimes I just wanted to be like, stop saying that to me. But it's so true. It's just so true. It goes so quickly, and like, you just have to remind yourself that all the time.
Oh, I love that, Courtney. Well, thank you so much.
I feel like I've talked so much.
It was fantastic. It's really quite inspiring. And yeah, I'd say I have apprehension around moving into the tween and teen years, but this has been very soothing to that, and realizing that, yeah, there is still so much that you can do to foster that closeness. And I think, like you've said a few times, it's just being open and respectful and loving towards them, and then trusting that like everything is a bit of a phase, and then there'll be a new one to tackle on the other side.
I think that's so true. I mean, teens get such a bad rap, you know. They really, like, I had so many parents say to me, oh, just you wait till they're teenagers. You know, so it's such a mean thing to say, you know, to a young mother. I remember people saying, oh, you think it's hard now? And it's so untrue. For one, it's so hard when they're little. Like, it is so hard. You're exhausted. You're touched out, like you said. You are giving everything, you know? And it does get easier, you know? It is easier to have older children. It just becomes slightly more, like, just your relationship becomes more mature. You know, there's an emotional kind of parenting that is required when they become teenagers, but actually how much joy can come from that? You know, this is a relationship that you get to have with another human being in your life. Like, I find it to be actually the best part of parenting, having a teenager. I love it so much. I love that, like, that, you know, like, one thing that is such a nice thing about parenting teens is that you can have an argument with your teen, or they can be really grumbly and gross. And you can go away from that conversation and then come back and have that kind of repair and that resolution. Like, it's harder with toddlers because they don't really, you can't be like, you know, that thing you did yesterday that was kind of like, you know, they don't really, they can't reflect back.
Yeah.
They can't really have a lesson that of something that happened before. You kind of have to parent like on the spot. And with teenagers, you, because they're older and they have that emotional intelligence, you can reflect back on things that happened even 2 days ago, a week ago, or, you know, can, and grow from that. Like you can become closer. It's all about that. Like teenagers, this is another, we haven't even gotten into this, but this is the whole other thing about parenting teenagers is that their brain is obviously, like I said at the start, growing in such a imbalanced way. And the frontal lobe is growing faster. Wait, now I'm getting mixed up. One of the lobes is growing faster than the other. And the emotional one is growing faster than the like rational one. So there's a part of the brain that's like the sense making, they know this isn't safe. This isn't kind. This isn't right. This, you know, they can, it controls the impulses, all that. The part that wants the attention and is emotional and seeks that is growing faster. So when you're having a argument with your teenager, the part of their brain that's the emotional part of their brain is so lit up that the other rational part of the brain can't even work. It doesn't even exist really in there at that moment. So you can't reason with them. And so I always find it helpful to know, like, you just need to kind of let it fizzle. Don't use that moment as a teaching moment and kind of just separate yourself. And then you can come back to that later and like have that sort of resolution and talk about it and then learn from that. And it's so nice because they can do that.
Wouldn't it be so nice if toddlers could do that?
Yes, there's like so many nice things about having teenagers. And I feel like they really do get a bad rap, but it's just like you've got some really beautiful parenting moments ahead of you because there's, you know, these little people that you're raising are going to become.
Well, like, and they say they're the best mirrors of you, a teenager, hey? Like, and I think that's what a lot of people say is when you have a teenager or a tween or whatever, that there's parts of you like that it shows up again. Like you don't remember being a toddler and you don't remember having tantrums and things, but when a teenager's going through things, you remember. I'm like, I remember doing this. I remember having tantrums at my mom. I remember throwing every piece of clothing I had on the floor, saying I've got nothing to wear and then refusing to go out and screaming. Like I remember that feeling, and I guess it's just trying to like, I guess, learn again and reparent yourself. Sometimes I feel like it's a challenge. Challenge to come.
Yeah, but it's so exciting.
Yes. And like, challenge and for it, us, I mean, sorry, like as a parent, like the teens get a bad rap, but I feel like a lot of it's just a reflection on us, don't you think? Like that well, we totally. Need, that we're it, learning with them.
As an opportunity to grow yourself.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, I felt like, you know, that parenting muscle definitely grows when you've got adolescents in your family because you've got to learn new skills and then that's exciting for you because you're, you know, yeah. And you learn more about yourself as well.
Oh, thank you, Courtney. And thank you for joining us while you were away on a holiday as well with your family. We really appreciate your wisdom and your time. And we'll make sure to link you and all of your courses and amazing resources in the show notes as well so that people can learn more because, yeah, I feel like we've probably just scratched the surface of everything teens and tweens. But thank you so much for joining us today.
Did you say your teen and tween course is coming out again in May? It's evergreen, but you're running it live.
Yep. Yes. And so soon I'm going to open the doors for registration really soon and we'll be running it live in May. I didn't run it live all of last year. So this will be a good opportunity to connect live with everybody who's signed up for the course.
Amazing. Well, yeah, we'll make sure we link that in the show notes.
Thank you.
Thanks, Courtney.
Thanks, Courtney.
Thanks for chatting.
Thank you for listening to Boob to Food, the podcast. We hope this episode made you feel inspired, confident, and less overwhelmed in your parenting journey.
Head to the show notes for all the resources mentioned on today's episode. And if you loved this podcast, please remember to subscribe, rate, and review.
See you next week. Bye.